where we get to enjoy just some time to relax and listen. To the rain this evening, listen to the story, the Chronicles of Narnia, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, as it takes us on a journey in our mind. I want to invite you to open your imaginations, which is really what stories and reading are so often about. There's the information, but then there's also the picture that it paints in our mind. I've been hearing a lot that the fall is people's favorite season, or maybe that's just because that's what I'm hearing people say because it's my favorite season. But regardless, it's so great to try and get outside as much as you can if you're able, just to breathe that fresh air and send it to anyone that might not be able to go outside. There's a loving kindness practice that I'll just offer up for a minute here. You can breathe in and breathe in love for yourself. Appreciation, and feel your heart warming as though you're showering yourself with a big hug, and your heart is radiating love for all that you are, all that you've been, and all that you will become. And as you breathe out, just let that go into the ground, the earth, which can hold so much for us. And then as you breathe in a second time, breathe in love for someone close to you. Maybe a parent, a sibling, a friend, a neighbor. And just send them some of that loving kindness. Can you imagine your heart warmth reaching out to embrace them? And as you exhale, just let it wash over yourself and maybe even in your mind's eye, this person that you are imagining. And then if we want to stretch even a little bigger, can you imagine sending some loving kindness to someone that maybe you need to do some repair with? Maybe someone that you were a little short with, or that you were a little mean. It could even be yourself or the other person that you already thought of this evening. And just imagine breathing in, filling your heart with that warmth that you have right inside of you, your flame, your fire, and your blood, and sending some of that love to this third person you're imagining. Breathing out, letting that go right into the ground, holding it all and keeping us rooted. I love this loving kindness practice because it's so portable. It can go with you anywhere. And it's free when you can remember to do it. And it helps you anchor, it helps me anchor onto something that's really good and really tangible. My love for myself and for people all around me. Sometimes it's hard to do, especially if we're encountering something big and scary. Or big or scary. Now I want to turn to our story where we have some of our daughters of Eve and son of Adam are with the beavers, trying to reach Aslan and go toward that place. But we also have one of the sons of Adam who has gone to the White Witch. The moon disappeared and the snow began to fall once more. And at last, Lucy was so tired that she was almost asleep and walking at the same time, when suddenly she found that Mr. Beaver had turned away from the riverbank to the right and was leading them steeply up hill into the very thickest bushes. And then as she came fully awake, she found that Mr. Beaver was just vanishing into a little hole in the bank, which had been almost hidden under the bushes until you were quite on top of it. In fact, by the time she realized what was happening, only his short, flat tail was showing. Lucy immediately stooped down and crawled in after him. Then she heard noises of scrambling and puffing and panting behind her, and in a moment, all five of them were inside. "Wherever is this?" said Peter, sounding tired and pale in the darkness. I hope you know what I mean by a voice sounding pale. "It's an old hiding place for beavers in bad times. And a great secret. It's not much of a place, but we must get a few hours of sleep. If you hadn't all been in such a plaguey fuss when we were starting, I'd have brought some pillows," said Mrs. Beaver. It wasn't nearly such a nice cave as Mr. Tumnus's, Lucy thought, just a hole in the ground, but dry and earthy. It was very small, so that when they all lay down, they were all in a bundle of fur and clothes together. And with what and being warmed up by their long walk, they were really rather quite snug. If only the floor of the cave had been a little smoother. Then Mrs. Beaver handed round in the dark a little flask out of which everyone drank something. It made one cough and splutter a little and stung the throat, but it made you feel deliciously warm after you swallowed it, and everyone went straight to sleep. It seemed to Lucy only the next minute, though really it was hours and hours later, when she woke up feeling a little cold and dreadfully stiff and thinking how she would like a hot bath. Then she felt a long set of whiskers tickling her cheek and saw the cold daylight coming in through the mouth of the cave. But immediately after that, she was very wide awake indeed, and so was everyone else. In fact, they were all sitting up with their mouths and eyes wide open, listening to a sound which was the very sound they'd all been thinking of, and sometimes imagining they'd heard during their walk last night. It was a sound of jingling bells. Mr. Beaver was out of the cave like a flash the moment he heard it. Perhaps you think, as Lucy thought for a moment, that this was a very silly thing for him to do? But it really was a very sensible one. He knew he could scramble to the top of the bank among bushes and brambles without being seen, and he wanted above all things to see which way the witch's sleigh was heading. The others all sat in the cave waiting and wondering. They waited nearly 5 minutes. Then they heard something that frightened them very much. They heard voices. Oh, thought Lucy, he's been seen. She's caught him. Great was their surprise when a little later they heard Mr. Beaver's voice calling to them from just outside the cave. It's all right, he was shouting. Come out, Mrs. Beaver. Come out, sons of and daughters of Adam and Eve. It's all right. It isn't her. This was bad grammar, of course, but that is now how beavers talk when they are excited. I mean, in Narnia, in our world, they usually don't talk at all. So Mrs. Beaver and the children came bundling out of the cave, all blinking in the daylight and with earth all over them, and looking very frosty and unbrushed and uncombed and with sleep in their eyes. Come on, said Mr. Beaver, who was almost dancing with delight. Come and see. This is a nasty knock for the witch. It looks as if her power was already crumbling. What do you mean, Mr. Beaver? Panted Peter as they all scrambled up the steep bank of the valley together. Didn't I tell you, Mr. Beaver said, that she'd made it always winter and never Christmas? Didn't I tell you? Well, just come and see. And then they were all at the top and did see. It was a sleigh, and it was reindeer with bells on their harness. But they were far bigger than the witch's reindeer, and they were not white, but brown. And on the sleigh sat a person whom everyone knew the moment they set eyes on him. It was a huge man in a bright red robe, bright as holly berries, with a hood that had fur inside it, and a great white beard that fell like a foamy waterfall over his chest. Everyone knew him because, though you see people of his sort only in Narnia, you see pictures of them and hear them talked about even in our world, the world on this side of the wardrobe door. But when you really see them in Narnia, it is rather different. Some of the pictures of Father Christmas in our world make him look only funny and jolly. But now that the children actually stood looking at him, they didn't find it quite like that at all. He was so big and so glad and so real that they all became quite still. They felt very glad, but also solemn. I've come at last, said he. She has kept me out for a long time. But I have got in at last. Aslan is on the move. The witch's magic is weakening. And Lucy felt running through her that deep shiver of gladness which you only get if you are being solemn and still. And now, said Father Christmas, for your presents, there is a new and better sewing machine for you, Mrs. Beaver. I will drop it in your house as I pass. If you please, sir, said Mrs. Beaver, making a curtsy, it's locked up. Locks and bolts make no difference to me, said Father Christmas. And as for you, Mr. Beaver, when you get home, you will find your dam finished and mended and all the leaks stopped and new sluice gate fitted. Mr. Beaver was so pleased that he opened his mouth very wide and then found he couldn't say anything at all. Peter, Adam's son, said Father Christmas. Yes, sir, said Peter. These are your presents, was the answer, and they are tools, not toys. The time to use them is perhaps near at hand. Bear them well. With these words, he handed to Peter a shield and a sword. The shield was the color of silver, and across it there ramped a red lion, as bright as a strawberry at the moment when you pick it. The hilt of the sword was of gold, and it had a sheath and a sword belt and everything it needed, and it was just the right size and weight for Peter to use. Peter was silent and solemn as he received these gifts, for he felt they were a very serious kind of present. Susan, Eve's daughter, these are for you. He handed her a bow and a quiver full of arrows and a little ivory horn. You must use the bow only in great need, for I do not mean you to fight in the battle. It does not easily miss. And when you put this horn to your lips and blow it, then wherever you are, I think help of some kind will come to you. Last of all, he said, Lucy, Eve's daughter. And Lucy came forward. He gave her a little bottle of what looked like glass, but people said afterward it was made of diamond, and a small dagger. In this bottle, there is a cordial made of juice of one of the fire flowers that grow in the mountains of the sun. If you or any of your friends are hurt, a few drops of this will restore you, and the dagger is to defend yourself at great need, for you are also not to be in the battle. Why, sir? I think I could be brave enough. That is not the point. Battles are ugly. And now, here's something for the moment for you all. And he brought out a big bag, a large tray containing 5 cups and saucers, a bowl of lump sugar, a jug of cream, and a great big teapot, all sizzling and piping hot. And then he cried out, Merry Christmas! Long live the true king! Aslan, of course, and cracked his whip, and he and the reindeer and the sleigh and all were out of sight before anyone realized that they had started. Peter had just drawn his sword out of its sheath and was showing it to Mr. Beaver when Mrs. Beaver said, now then, don't stand talking there till the tea gets cold. Come and help to carry the tray down and we'll have breakfast. What a mercy, I thought, of bringing the bread knife. So down the steep bank they went and back to the cave, and Mr. Beaver cut some of the bread and ham into sandwiches, and Mrs. Beaver poured out the tea and everyone enjoyed. But long before they had finished enjoying themselves, Mr. Beaver said, Time to be moving on now. Aslan is nearer. Edmund, meanwhile, had been giving a most disappointing time. When the dwarf had got the sleigh ready, he expected that the witch would start being nice to him, as she had been at their last meeting. But she said nothing at all. And when at last Edmund plucked up his courage to say, Please, Your Majesty, could I have some Turkish delight? You said... She answered, Silence, fool! Then she appeared to change her mind and said to herself, And yet it will not do any good to have that brat fainting on the way, and once more clapped her hands. Another dwarf did appear. Bring the human creature food and drink, she said, and the dwarf went away and presently returned, bringing an iron bowl with some water and an iron plate with a hunk of dry bread. He grinned in a repulsive manner and set them down on the floor beside Edmund and said, Turkish delight for the little prince, ha, ha, ha. Take it away, said Edmund. I don't want dry bread. But the witch suddenly turned on him with such a terrible expression on her face that he apologized and began to nibble on the bread, though it was so stale he could hardly get it down. You may be glad enough of it before you taste bread again, said the witch. While he was still chewing away, the first dwarf came back and announced that the sleigh was ready. The white witch rose and went out, ordering Edmund to go with her. And the snow was again falling as though they came into the courtyard. She took no notice of that and made Edmund sit beside her on the sleigh. Before they drove off, she called Fenris Ulf, and he came bounding like an enormous dog to the side of the sleigh. Take with you one of the swiftest of your wolves and go at once to the house of the beavers and kill whatever you find there. If they are already gone, then make all speed to the stone table, but do not be seen. Wait for me there in hiding. I meanwhile must go many miles to the west before I find a place where I can drive across the river. You may overtake these humans before they reach the stone table. You will know what to do if you find them. I hear and obey, O queen, growled the wolf. and immediately he shot into the snow and darkness, and as quickly as a horse can gallop. In a few minutes, he had called another wolf and was with him down on the dam and sniffing at the beaver's house. But of course, they found it empty. It would have been a dreadful thing for the beavers and the children if the night had remained fine, for the wolves would have been able to follow their trail, and 10 to 1 would have overtaken them before they'd gotten to the cave. But now that the snow had begun again, the scent was cold, and even the footprints were covered up. Meanwhile, the dwarf whipped up the reindeer, and the witch and Edmund drove out under the archway and on and away into the darkness and cold. It was a terrible journey for Edmund, who had no coat. Before they had been going a quarter of an hour, all the front of him was covered with snow. He soon stopped trying to shake it off, because as quickly as he did that, a whole new lot had gathered, and he was so tired. Soon he was wet to the skin, and oh, how miserable he was. It didn't look now as if the witch intended to make him a king. All the things he had said to make himself believe that she was good and kind and that her side was really the right side sounded to him silly now. He would have given anything to meet the others at this moment, even Peter. The only way to comfort himself now was to try to believe that the whole thing was a dream, and that he might wake up at any moment. And as they went on hour after hour, it did come to seem like a dream. This lasted longer than I could describe, even if I wrote pages and pages about it. But I will skip on to the time when the snow had stopped and the morning had come, and they were racing along in the daylight. And still they went on, with no sound but the everlasting swish, swish, swish of the snow and the creaking of the reindeer's harness. And then, at last, the witch said, "What have we here? Stop!" And they did. How Edmund hoped she was going to say something about breakfast. But she had stopped for quite a different reason. A little way off at the foot of the tree sat a merry party, a squirrel and his wife with their children, and 2 satyrs, and a dwarf, and an old dog fox, all on stools round a table. Edmund couldn't quite see what they were eating, but it smelled lovely, and there seemed to be decorations of holly, and he wasn't at all sure that he didn't see something like a plum pudding. At the moment when the sleigh stopped, the fox, who was obviously the oldest person present, had just risen to its feet, holding the glass in its right paw as if it was going to say something. But when the whole party saw the sleigh stopping and saw who it was, all the gaiety went right out of their faces. The father squirrel stopped eating with his fork halfway to his mouth, and one of the satyrs stopped with his fork actually in its mouth, and the baby squirrels squealed with terror. "What is the meaning of this?" asked the witch queen. Nobody dared answer. "Speak, vermin, or do you want my dwarf to find you a tongue with his whip? What is the meaning of all this gluttony, this waste, this self-indulgence? Where did you get all of these things?" "Please, your majesty," said the fox, "we were given them, and if I might make so bold as to drink to your majesty's very good health." "Who gave them to you?" said the witch. Father Christmas, stammered the fox. "What?" roared the witch, springing from the sleigh and taking a few strides nearer to the terrified animals. "He has not been here. He cannot have been here. How dare you? But no. Say you have been lying, and you shall even now be forgiven." At that moment, one of the young squirrels lost its head completely. "He has! He has! He has!" it squeaked beating its little spoon on the table. Edmund saw the witch bite her lips so that a drop of blood appeared on her white cheek. Then she raised her wand. "Oh, don't! Don't! Don't!" shouted Edmund. But even while he was shouting, she had waved her wand, and instantly where the merry party had been, there were only statues of creatures. Seated round a stone table, on which there were stone plates and a stone plum pudding. "As for you," said the witch, giving Edmund a stunning blow on the face as she remounted the sleigh, "let that teach you to ask favor for spies and traitors. Drive on." And Edmund, for the first time in this story, felt sorry for someone besides himself. It seemed so pitiful to think of those little stone figures sitting there all the silent days and all the dark nights, year after year, till the moss grew on them, and at last even their faces crumbled away. Now they were steadily racing on again, and soon Edmund noticed that the snow which splashed against them as they rushed through it was much wetter than it had been all last night. At the same time, he noticed that he was feeling much less cold. It was also becoming foggy. In fact, every minute it grew both foggier and warmer, and the sleigh was not running nearly as well as it had been running up until now. At first, he thought this was because the reindeer were tired, but soon he saw that that couldn't be the real reason. The sleigh jerked and skidded and kept on jolting as if it had struck against stones. And however the dwarf whipped the poor reindeer, the sleigh went slower and slower. There were also seemed to be a curious noise all around them, but the noise of their driving and jolting and the dwarfs shouting at the reindeer prevented Edmund from hearing what it was, until suddenly the sleigh stuck so fast it couldn't go on at all. When what happened there was a moment's silence. And in that silence, Edmund could at last listen to the other noise properly. Let us wonder what that strange and sweet noise could be. Might it be Christmas coming? And the turning of the seasons? Let us look forward to our next week in the Chronicles of Narnia and where C.S. Lewis might take us next. Good night to all, and to all a good night.